Oh, hey, how are you? Great to hear. Yeah, come in. Make yourself comfortable. Like a drink? Sure. There you go. Welcome to the Tech Lounge. Shall we begin? Welcome to the Tech Lounge with me, Chris Chinchilla. Today is an interview very much in the show's wheelhouse. It's with Daniela from Momento, a caching and other things platform. I do have to apologize. This interview was recorded quite some time ago. Really trying to catch up with these, but every now and then a few fall between the gaps, and this was very much one that did, which is sort of ironic because their logo is a squirrel. And squirrels are sort of good at finding things that fall behind gaps, maybe. Who knows? Anyway, it's a great interview. Sorry for the delay. So I will shut up and let the interview take over. Do enjoy. Git is an essential tool and workflow for almost any developer in the world these days. And Git can be easy for some, but hard for others. And I've always been a fan of Git graphical tools, Git GUIs that help me and could help you understand some of those more esoteric commands or just speed up what you do on a regular basis. Tower is perhaps one of the oldest and preeminent and best known Mac and Windows Git GUIs. And if you want to get 25% off their full price tool, then head on over to go.christianchiller.com/Tower. So good morning, Daniela. How is this for your morning? How is it in your morning, wherever you happen to be?
I'm in Seattle, Washington. Okay. My morning is going really well. A rare sunny day in Seattle. Probably not too many of these left.
We have much the same here. I'm in Berlin, and every day it's like, this is going to be the last day of sun. And then another one keeps coming. And so we're all like, is this the last one? Is this the last one? I don't know.
Oh, we're all very fortunate.
And we'll see when it finally is the last one. But yes. But we are here to speak about... too many windows open. You speak about Momento. I firstly want to ask a question. You've got a squirrel as a logo here. What's the story behind the squirrel?
Well, as you know, any tech company, we know that developers love a memorable, cute mascot. Mm-hmm. You know, you got the Octocat from GitHub. Yep. You got the Docker whale. We wanted one of our own. And, you know, we wanted something memorable, obviously. Our very first product, our flagship product, is caching, Momento. Yep. Caching, serving real-time data. And, you know, the act of caching is something that a squirrel does, of course, stock up for the winter. It's perfect. Once we sort of arrived on that little tidbit, everything kind of just,
I like it because you have caching and storage. Then topics.
Exactly.
Topics is a little, the analogy goes out the window a little bit after a certain point.
Yeah, yeah. We'll just not pay attention to that for a second.
But anyway, what is Momento, your initial slogan? And I like the fact you have a squirrel running. A squirrel is fast, but it's not necessarily known as a fast creature, but it's fast when it needs to be. Accelerate everything. Accelerate what exactly? I don't think you want to accelerate everything precisely, but like, what are we accelerating with Momento?
I think mostly end user applications.
Okay.
Or you can think of accelerate your experience, your user experience. You know, in today's world, really going from mobile first into now everything is AI enabled. People expect personalization, and they expect it fast, and they expect it in an interactive way. In order to be interactive, you really have to do a lot of calculations, a lot of data accesses super, super fast. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, we all know that for every user action that gets taken, there's probably hundreds of API calls being made behind the scenes. So you don't get a lot of budget, latency-wise, for each API call.
Yep.
That's where Momento is the most relevant, is that it accelerates all those calls to your database by adding this caching layer. You know, it seems simple, but really when you put it into a complex application, it can be quite a lot of work to be managing caching, and Momento aims to take that management layer away.
And what, I mean, cashiers have existed for some time and there's plenty of them, some very well established. So I think two questions. What does Memento do differently and why did you want to do it differently?
I'll start with the second one because that's the second question. That's the motivation. You know, we want it to work in the space of tech infrastructure. That's where Quadra, my co-founder, and I, that's where our background had been. We didn't really know where the exact right pain point to tackle was, right? Ideation was kind of all over the place. So we just decided to kind of sit down and build something ourselves and kind of feel it out for ourselves. And very quickly, it took only a few months. You know, we built this fitness app. It was something we were passionate about. During the pandemic, we wanted something that allowed people to collaboratively work out together. And then we had all these real-time challenges where you could see like timers and, you know, new moves being brought up on the challenge. So naturally, we used a cache for a lot of the user metadata, the challenge metadata. And, you know, we were managing our own Redis cluster inside of AWS. And we realized that in the database world, a lot of improvements and a lot of evolution has occurred in terms of how much you can abstract away the internals of the database, right? You know, DBAs is not a very common role anymore. Like nobody's really just sitting there full-time managing just a database cluster. A lot of that becomes a part of the package that you purchase when you receive a database service. Mm. Now, we built some of that as a part of AWS DynamoDB, but that's certainly not the only database service that offers that kind of developer-first experience. You're kind of just coding away and, you know, you fetch something from the database, you put something into the database, and you're really just communicating with an endpoint.
Yeah.
You're not thinking about how many shards do I have? How many replicas do I need? You're not thinking about the complexity of Paxos in order to guarantee that, you know, your data is durable and consistent. So I think the same concept we thought could be applied to caching, where, again, there are shards, there are replicas, there is a warm-up process when you do deployments to make sure that the cache doesn't just empty because you're using a new machine. And a lot of that was still self-managed and self-administered in the like manage your own Redis or manage your own Memcache way. So we thought we could put that layer, like very much a lot of the database services have provided for durable data, we could put that layer on top of caching.
Okay.
So that was the motivation for Memento. And I think I sort of also covered the differentiator.
Yep.
What we really focus on is having a dependable caching service that's really easy to onboard, is lightning fast, and you just don't have to worry about maintaining it, including scaling up, including handling load spikes that might 10x from your baseline. And those are some of the things that by taking it away from our users, we're hoping that we give them more time back to improve their application experience, make their applications more special, more unique, and more competitive.
Yeah.
So that's what's different about Memento.
Okay. And what was the origin story? I know I was initially said, oh, ex-AWS, and you've mentioned Dynamo. I could also see your current banner talks about EventBridge. I mean, AWS has a lot of products, but so how did you get here from where you were before? What did you want to do differently from the myriad of things that AWS offers?
Yeah, for sure. I was having a really great time at AWS. Like I mentioned, I was on the DynamoDB team. I actually had a short stint on the ElasticCache team as well. You know, also collaborated with a lot of other AWS service teams. You know, at the end of the day, I felt like it was an established company with established processes and structure. And I wanted to work at a startup to kind of just broaden my horizons in terms of what can one do outside of engineering as well. Because at a startup, you kind of have a little bit of everything and you have to put on so many hats. So back in like 2016, I decided to join a very small startup that at the time out of SF called Lightstep. Were in the observability space.
Yep.
Okay. You're smiling like,
No, so, I used to work for one of their competitors.
Yeah, I mean, super hot space still, yeah. You know, and also another space that serves a lot of developers, which is kind of where my true passion is. I spent over 4 years there, had a lot of fun growing with the company, helping grow the company, and then, you know, went through a lot of career growth myself. And, you know, of course, the company was acquired back in 2021, which is right around the time where Quadra and I started talking about starting a venture together. You know, I had the Lightstep experience. It was going really well. And, you know, that sort of gave me the little itch, right, that I wanted to scratch to start a company of my own.
And I mean, how much of Memento is from scratch, or have you leveraged some existing open source core here or there? However much detail do you want to go into?
Yeah, that's definitely something we can talk about. I think there are two things that we built from scratch. Mm-hmm. And then a thing that we did not. So like I talked about, a lot of the focus for us is on the speed, simplicity, and the reliability, you know, making sure that we're here to serve your mission critical systems that doesn't just go down when the traffic spikes or whatever. So then the first thing that we did from scratch is our operational practices and, you know, things like 24/7 on call, things like weekly reviews of our dashboard. So that's more on the like, why is our team uniquely positioned to operate a service like this? Why should we be trusted with, you know, critical running these critical services? On the technical front, we have a two-tiered architecture. So we built this architecture where we have a fronting fleet that fronts all the requests. And then that acts as a layer that absorbs the traffic, absorbs the spikes, and that's very flexible. And then that fleet is responsible for then directing the traffic to actually access the data, whether it's a write or a read. So that layer is also completely written from scratch. Alongside, you know, we also have handcrafted SDKs. What we didn't work on from scratch, but is actually on the roadmap eventually, is that for the actual storage of the data, we utilize a lot of open source software. I've mentioned two already, Redis and Memcache. There is a project that's sort of a spin-off off of a Memcache called Segcache or Pelican that spun out of Twitter/X. Yeah. We work with a lot of the X caching engineers from that team to sort of integrate a lot of that. It's open source to integrate a lot of that into our system as well. In the future, you can think of things like on-disk storage. So something like RocksDB is very much in the possibility. And I mentioned on our own roadmap, there are things that's unique to our customers, to the way that we want to handle something like multi-tenancy in our fleet that I think warrants us putting some effort into our own like Memento inspired engine. It's just with a small team, you have to prioritize and you have to choose what to work on. Yeah. So we're really focused on making that management layer really easy to use by the customers, really reliable and fast for now.
And so you've mentioned a few things like caching topics, especially, which have some fairly pre-established open source standards. How much, even though you're kind of closed source yourself, how much do you integrate with some of these? So if I'm coming from Kafka or Redis and I want to switch to you, is it relatively easy? And should I want to switch back, is it relatively easy? You could, even though you're proprietary, you're conforming to expected standards.
Yeah, I think that we definitely want to make the onboarding and the offboarding, but you know, you want to give people that choice. While we didn't adopt, for example, the Redis protocol natively, and we did that for a reason, we felt like that majority of a lot of our customers and our customer use cases can be served by a subset of the Redis API. I mean, Redis is just so powerful, but it's also jack of all trades. It does so many things. And we want to focus our product surface area and on making it just like super reliable. And we also want to provide guardrails. Mm-hmm. There are certain things that do not play well with real-time data in production. So we have our own protocol. It's based on gRPC. It's also completely open source. You know, it's not a proprietary protocol. Yep. We just created it from scratch so that we can reduce the surface area. In terms of the integration, we actually have a dedicated engineering team sort of integrating with the existing ecosystem. So what we've done, for example, is that we provide these drop-in client-side replacements where you can switch back and forth from Redis and Momental. And we've actually onboarded quite a few customers via this manner in terms of a live migration with zero downtime. So what they would do is make these dependency changes, and the client layer essentially translates the Redis calls into Momental calls. And you could do a dual write for a period of time to populate the cache, and then eventually switch over the reads to read from Momental, and eventually turn off if you're happy with Momental services. And then, of course, if for whatever reason, again, we hope it doesn't happen, but if for whatever reason they want to do the reverse, that's completely possible as well.
And go back. Does the same apply with Topics, or is Topics more...
With Topics, Kafka compatibility is on our radar. Okay. So far, we focused on a different class of use cases than Kafka. Okay. We're very focused on, again, instantaneous real-time broadcast to many, many different end devices, which is, like I said, you could use Kafka for that, but that's not what Kafka is known for. So we do have our own APIs for that. And it's very simple. It's just a publish and a subscribe to receive the published. There's two APIs. It's also completely open source, like I mentioned, but it is also based on gRPC. We actually make a lot of use of gRPC streaming for the subscribe.
Yeah, okay. Makes sense. Yep, okay. And let's go back a little bit then to the story of the company. How long have you been around?
We have been around. We raised our seed round back in, I think it was July 2021. So a little over 3 years. Wow.
Old, no.
old and startup age for sure,
And I recognize at least one of the companies you have here, Saturn. I'm assuming it's the German retailer. The logo is the same.
It's actually not. It's a US-based company. Although we'd love to have different customers with the same name.
The logo looks almost identical to them. It's weird.
Well, I mean, I guess it's Saturn, the planet. But we will be reaching out. We say, hey, we already have one happy Saturn customer.
It could be that they have an American brand I wasn't aware of, because it looks so similar. I don't know. Okay. Is there any particular companies or industries that tend to gravitate towards you?
Yes. Actually, not everyone we can, unfortunately, market on our website. But the very first vertical that's caught a lot of wind of and a lot of sort of attraction is media. So, we do work with several teams under the Paramount umbrella to help serve their live streams, for instance, to help serve like their sports pages, sports betting. A lot of these events, you can naturally think about why latency matters and why being super, super responsive matters. And then based on that workload, once you have one kind of running in production, you have a lot more experience in sort of working with that kind of workload. We're working with several other broadcasters as well on similar use cases, especially when it relates with live streaming and honestly, just events where you can't afford to fail and has unpredictable traffic. That's where we really shine. And we do also work really well with gaming customers. That would be our second biggest vertical.
Okay.
In-game chats, notifications, things like raids, tournaments.
I've double-checked. It's not the same Saturn. I don't know. I think they've changed their logo at a certain point. Maybe the German Saturn might have asked them to. Anyway, I always wondered... with something like a cache, you've talked about media, but traditionally, traditional caches came in a sort of pre-heavy media world. Do you have to tune and handle things differently from your end to handle these different sorts of media, versus just like static text versus streamed media versus gaming media, which is static plus, dynamism? How do you have to tune a product like yours to meet these different demands?
Yeah, it's a really good question. I haven't been asked that often. We are constantly tuning on the back end. I mean, I think as you can imagine with any startup, you don't really know a lot of the requirements for real until you hit production or until you get more and more workloads. Mm-hmm. So we've actually automated some of it. So for instance, you mentioned things like text data versus, streaming video data. So text versus binary is a really good example. Something like automatic compression in transit and in storage So in transit and at rest makes a lot of sense, especially if you're sending us JSON data. We're just going to compress it, saves you money because you're not paying for as much storage and you're not paying to transfer as many bytes over the wire. It's one of the other reasons we also use protobuf by default for our gRPC. You know, it's pretty compact in terms of efficiency of transfer. And then there are other things like, you know, placement, having something like we are on AWS, so having your AZ, having your availability zones aligned with our clients to minimize like cross-zone hops in the happy case, but then having a replica in a different availability zone in case of, you know, things like disaster and for backup. So there's a lot of that happening behind the scenes. I talked about that unpredictable spike, right? So there's a lot of the scaling up that needs to be done. I talked about different storage engines. Depending on the size of your keys and the age and how often they need to be expired out of memory, it might be better. A memcache is very, very good for disk key value. So, you know, that's a choice. A lot of this shouldn't really be, you know, customers shouldn't bother with this. It's tuning that we do on our back end. They just know that they get the best performance when they need it. And it's also more likely to be more cost effective than managing it on their own. So that's a lot of it. And some of it is manual right now. We're going to have to take these lessons one by one and automate them over time.
In the past, I've interviewed someone from Fastly and also Akamai, which is not completely a cache, but similar kind of business. And the question I always have to ask people in this kind of business is like, what do you do? You know, people rely on you. I thought I saw somewhere your SLA, but I now can't find it. But how do you ensure that you stay up and you don't bring down, you know, the traffic of your customers as well?
Yeah, I mean, that's the mission criticality piece that I talked about. You know, other than the technical piece of building the two-tiered architecture, the first thing I mentioned was actually the operational culture. Yeah. You start when you're three engineers. Like literally our first three engineers, we started this weekly process. And I say process, people might find that boring, but honestly, you got to build muscle memory for these things. You wake up, you check your dashboards, you check your alerts. Every week, we check everything that happened that week. We dig into, you know, all the anomalies in our system. We have a, you know, corrective of errors, correction of errors, which is basically like a retro post-incident analysis for everything that happens that causes customer impact. A lot of this is just muscle memory that you build into the operational ownership culture of the company. And I think, you know, having like a good track record speaks for itself. You know, we haven't had any major incidents with any of our customers. Now, law of small numbers, we don't have that many customers compared to, you know, of course, a successful company like Fastly, but we do intend to definitely scale with the current kind of operational quality that we have.
How do you even, I always wonder with a company like yourself as well, it's the same with any company, but with something like your business model, it's even harder. How do you even test for this? You know, I think Netflix used to, I don't know if they still do, had this concept of, you know, chaos engineering chaos and testing. Things like that. Like, how do you test for the potential scale of a customer when you haven't experienced it yet necessarily?
Yeah, I mean, I would say at any given time, 20 to 30% of our very small engineering team is dedicated to maintaining and regularly benchmarking our system at scale. So, you know, I mentioned these XS caching engineers from Twitter /X. They were experts at this at their old company where they saw a lot of these spikes. So we collaborate with them a lot on the performance benchmarking and having a sophisticated test suite because, you know, it's expensive and it's difficult to try to replicate production traffic synthetically. So that's something that we definitely specialize on. In fact, it has become a competitive edge for us to provide these services during something like a POC, because oftentimes customers don't have the resources or the tooling to emulate and simulate their production traffic. So what they can do, so for a gaming customer that we're working with, and we've done this a few times with gaming, especially, gaming is like so difficult to predict. I mean, you want your launch day to be a massive success, but you're also scared about, well, like how high is my peak going to be? So, you know, something that we did with a customer recently is they gave us some numbers on, well, okay, I think like maybe we'll hit this million, you know, active users, and that translates into this much operations. Can you help us run a test at scale that, you know, generates this kind of traffic pattern? And, you know, they tell us all the specifications. We administer the test for them using our test suite against Momental, but not just against Momental, but, you know, if they have the other requests, we can actually help them, and they can take that. It's open source. It's an open source tool. They can take that and run it against their own systems to find, you know, maybe issues or bottlenecks in other parts of their system as well. So it's a very much collaborative process as we onboard our customer.
Which tool is that? Because I actually may even have a use for something like that. I'm looking on your GitHub.
It's not under our GitHub. It's under, like I said, the other team's GitHub that we've been working with. It's called RPC Perf.
Very memorable.
Yeah, but, very straightforward name.
But if you know what you're looking for. Oh, there it is. Got it. Yeah. Okay. Cool. So I think I could see you have on your most immediate roadmap this storage solution. But what else is on the roadmap for the next 6 to 12 months?
You know, things are always changing so much in the startup world. I think that we are going to be really doubling down on making our caching and our topics products more and more featureful and robust. Of course, storage is always on people's minds in terms of, well, what if I want my data to, you know, persist more than just in memory, more than caching? And what if I want my messages to, you know, be retained for multiple days? So that's kind of an extension on top of our two existing products. And then if you think about the nexus between them, right? A lot of possibility and potential with something happens in your cache and that fires off a message. So that's also on the roadmap, what we've been calling triggers and executors, right? You have an event that triggers something and then you execute, you know, some kind of, right now we have webhooks, but it could really just be like a function. It triggers an action to be taken based on that trigger. And then there are other exciting things in terms of the vertical use cases. So that's not so much of a product change, but rather, what can we do more specifically for our media customers to serve these live streaming cases as well, and things like that. So I think a lot of it really depends on the direction and the scale of our customers and their requirements. You know, we'll be listening to our customers for their feature requests as well.
So if people are interested in trying, I notice you have an on-demand kind of tier, $1 per million operations. What is an operation? So a million sounds like a lot, but I'm guessing maybe it isn't. I don't know.
Yeah. So operation actually encompasses two concepts. You know, first of all, it's a unit of work that you perform. It's a data access, basically, in Momental system, or in the topics case, it's a message. The second dimension it captures is, of course, the actual size of that data. So it's 1 kilobyte chunks. So if you access a 2 kilobyte chunk, that's two operations.
Okay.
But we've sort of unified that into a unit that's easy for people to think about, well, how many operations have I consumed in the past 10 minutes? Or at peak, how many operations do I need to support per second? That is really the resolution that a lot of customers like gaming really care about, right? They don't care about per minute. They need to know that per second you can handle this many operations.
And that makes sense for your next tier, which is 100,000 operations per second. And the price jumps up a fair bit. But
I think in terms of mission criticality, it is not something that you really want to quote-unquote be cheap on. The way we think about it is we give you an on-demand tier to try things out in pre-prod and, you know, with some level of flexibility. And then once you want to lock it in, like I said, there is a price jump. And with that comes with, you know, things like support and guaranteed capacity, which is important for those spots.
Cool. So if people are interested in trying that, we have GoMomento.
Yep. GoMomento.com. Yep. Check us out. Yep.
And it is possible you have a self sign up, which is always nice. That shows you've been around for a couple of years, because that can take a surprisingly long amount of time for startups.
No, we have a self-service console. You can check out caching and topics in our console. And totally feel free to reach out if you have any more requests.
Then awesome. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Chris. This was fun.
So that was it. That was our guest today. Thank you very much for joining me in the Tech Lounge. I have been Christian Schiller. If you want to know more about Tech Lounge, head on over to christianschiller.com. thefoxhole.com, or please tell your friends about us. It's quiet and cozy in here, but the more listeners, the merrier. You can find more at christianchiller.com/podcast or in the show notes or episode notes, wherever you found this podcast. Thank you very much for joining me, and you're most welcome next time.